which way round?
This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 17th of August, 2012. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle dated the 16th of August 2012, which this week has been edited by Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase. Your readers today are Lorna Chorley.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. A few announcements this week. We've just finished the Olympics and what a wonderful event it was. And we're now coming up to the Paralympics. And there are two brothers living in Chandler's Ford, Adam Knott, 17, and his brother David, who attend Peter Simmons and Thorndon, respectively. And they were both born with ocular albinism and only have 10% sight. And they're outstanding sportsmen, and they've both been selected for the Paralympic goalball team. And the team is now training at Peter Simmons. They have very little in the way of funding, and the Winchester Rotary Club and the Winchester Inner Wheel are organising a raffle in support of these two Paralympics. The chairman of Winchester Rotary, of course, is David Farthing, who was previously chairman of the Talking Newspaper. So what they're doing is that they're organising a raffle, which will be drawn by the Mayor of Winchester on Friday, September the 14th, to raise money to support these two local Paralympians. Okay, various prizes, mostly dinners for two at various restaurants around in Winchester, travel voucher, chauffeured limo for the evening. How about that? Anyway, if you would be interested in supporting this very deserving cause to support two Paralympians with only 10% sight, if you would like to get raffle tickets for this, if you could contact directly David Farthing, and his telephone number is 01962 856038. That's 01962 856038. To help support the Rotary campaign to support two local Paralympians. Another announcement, a little way ahead, which is not until October, but I gather that tickets are selling quite briskly for it, is that in Winchester Cathedral they're producing something called Chronicles of Light. And it's a spectacular 90-minute performance in sight and in sound and light, which tells the extraordinary stories of Winchester Cathedral and its people and events. So everybody from King Canute through to Josephine Butler, who was a campaigner for women's rights. If you're interested in finding out more about it or getting tickets, if you could contact the Cathedral box office, which is 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275. And the show is on in October from Friday the 12th of October through to Sunday the 28th of October. And it will be in the evenings at 7:30. So that's Winchester Chronicles of Light. That's the announcements for this week. Lighting up times today, Friday the 17th of August. The sun rose at 05:56. That's just before 6 o'clock in the morning. And will set today at 20:23, so that's about just after 20 past 8 in the evening. A week's time, Wednesday the 22nd of August, the sunrise will be at 06:04, that's just after 6 o'clock in the morning, and sunset will be at 20:12, appropriately for the year, which is just after 10 past 8 in the evening. If you have any problems with your memory sticks or your players, the person to contact is Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826. And there's a laminated card with this information inside each wallet, should you need to consult it. But please leave the card inside the wallet when you return it. Right, we now get on to the items of news from the Hampshire Chronicle. The main headlines this week are: primary school crisis set to get worse, warning. District among the worst for fly tipping, says report. And commuters taking the strain as fares soar. So we'll start off with the first headline story.
Winchester councillor is warning that the primary school crisis will worsen unless another new school is provided in the northern part of the city. Many local primary schools are oversubscribed, and several, such as St Bede and Week, have had to build extensions to accommodate the growing number of pupils, while temporary classrooms have been sited at others. The County Council recently announced a new super school for pupils aged between 4 and 16. These will be providing at the Westgate Secondary School in Fulford, on the site of the Rotherley Boarding School. But Dominic Hiscock, a long-time chairman of governors at St Bede Primary School in Hyde, says that that's not enough. He said the Conservative Council-controlled and County Councils were doing too little to prevent another serious crisis in the near future. At Abbots Barton, the county looked at but ruled out putting a new school on the open space between Chandler Road and River Itchen and the Charles Close and Abbots Barton farmhouse. Other possible sites in the area, Councillor Hiscock said, included land at Francis Gardens next to the Red Row development and also at Courtney Road on land owned by Carla Holmes. He said these are areas where it would be physically possible to build. Whether it is politically or financially possible is another matter. The problem is going to get worse, but no one is talking about it. People seem to be in denial, which isn't very helpful. The problem is not going to go away. The bigger school at Westgate does not solve the problem. Councillor Hiscock called on the City and County Council to work with more urgency. With the building of more houses, the more difficult it is going to get, he said. The council is talking about building more council houses in Abbots Barton. Residents there will ask, why are we building more family homes when there are not enough school places already? Should 2,000 new homes be built on agricultural land at Barton Farm, the plan is to build a new primary school there. Councillor Roy Perry, who is in charge of children's services at the County Council, defended the county, saying plans were in the pipeline to provide hundreds of new primary school places in the city from September 2014 to meet demand. He said Winchester is facing much the same pressure on primary school places that is being experienced across the country, and the County Council has taken a very positive step in setting out its intention to provide new primary schools at the Westgate School. This, together with the proposed expansion of Winnall and St Peter's primary schools, are the option in the future of expanding other existing schools. That means that the city will be well served and well placed to meet the current and future demands by primary school places. But the Tory council chief did not rule out a new primary at Abbots Barton, adding it may indeed be a potential site for a new school in the future, if and when the need arises and is being kept under review.
District among worst for fly tipping, says report. Winchester is one of the top 20 worst places in the South East for fly tipping, according to new government statistics. there were 912 incidents of fly tipping in the district between April 2010 and March 2011, leaving Winchester 19th out of 67 local authorities surveyed. But it was an improvement on the previous year, with 70 fewer incidents than 2009-2010. Rob Heathcock, Assistant Director of Environment at Winchester City Council, said staff were working hard to deal with fly tipping wherever they found it. He said, "Our numbers have gone down because we have a proactive clearance service and we remove it as quickly as possible. Something we are doing later this year is looking to train neighbourhood wardens to deal with fly tipping and take additional enforcement action, such as monitoring hot spot sites and catch people in the act." The council spends up to £100,000 each year clearing away illegally dumped rubbish, and Mr. Heathcock said it was time to get more proactive. He said, "It's something we take very seriously and I would love to get the number down to zero. We would like to get some more convictions under our belts, but the problem is it tends to get displaced once action is taken and fly tippers move somewhere else." He said staff believe many incidents came from people crossing over the Winchester boundary from other areas and dumping rubbish. Mr. Heathcock added easy access to the council's three household waste recycling centres in Winchester, Alsford and Bishop's Waltham was another reason the number of cases has reduced. He called for the public to remain vigilant over fly tipping, and anyone who witnesses illegal dumping should contact the council with the registration number of an offending vehicle. Winchester was squeaky clean compared with Southampton, which topped the survey carried out by the Department for Environment, Food and Rural Affairs. But although there were 8,708 cases of fly tipping in Southampton in 2010-2011, it was a marked improvement from the previous year's tally of 13,569. The Test Valley area also came in the top 10 fly tipping areas, with 1,881 cases, a rise of 400 from 2009-2010, whilst Eastleigh ranked mid-table with just 665. The Isle of Wight was the cleanest local authority, with only 249 recorded cases of fly tipping. Union GMB said two-thirds of fly tipping involved household rubbish and called on Hampshire councils to open more refuse tips and recycling centres to make it easier and cheaper for the public to dispose of waste properly.
Commuters taking the strain as rail fares soar. 6% hike pushes up cost of annual London season ticket to £4,600. Winchester Rail commuters are facing a huge 6.2% hike in their annual season ticket prices from next January. It means a season ticket from Winchester to London, currently £4,372, will go up to £4,643, an increase of £271. A greater than expected jump in the annual inflation rate, RPI, was blamed for the big increase. It is used to determine how much regulated rail fares, including season and saver tickets, are allowed to increase in 2013. RPI rose to 3.2% in July from 2.8% in the previous month, according to the Office for National Statistics. The city had expected the rate to remain flat at 2.8%. It means Hampshire Rail users will see their season tickets rocket by more than £1,000 in just 5 years, campaigners have warned. Embattled commuters travelling from Winchester and Southampton are among the worst affected in the country. Government rules mean rail operators can set fares at up to 3% above Tuesday's inflation figure. But the complex system meant that in reality, some could have gone up by 10%, as long as prices on other routes are kept low. Ministers hinted at new measures to control fare rises that could be announced later this year. But the Treasury is keen to stick to the current pricing model as the government looks to rein in public spending. The Campaign for Better Transport has calculated the likely impact of Tuesday's announcement on fares in some of the key commuting hotspots into London. Based on current inflation figures, it highlighted Winchester and Southampton as £1,000 towns, places where commuters' tickets will rise by an average of £1,000 between 211 and 215. A Winchester season ticket is likely to rise between £1,275 to £5,647 between 2011 and 2015. An annual pass between Southampton and London is expected to be as much as £5,733 by 2015. Tuesday's announcement affects regulated fares, which include annual season tickets and some intercity services. Stephen Joseph, the chief executive of the Campaign for Better Transport, said, "If the government sticks by its policy, rail fares will rise three times faster than salaries. With the economy flatlining, this is untenable. If rail fares are allowed to gallop ahead like this, many commuters to London will soon be paying as much to travel to work as they do in income tax. This is no way to stimulate the economy." Transport Secretary Justine Greening said, "I'm keen to see what we can do to keep rail fares down to something affordable. I shall be looking at whether there is a way of doing that in the autumn, but we have to stick with our deficit reduction policy."
Next, we have the death announcements. Ashill, Blanche Ashill, aged 97, on the 25th of July. Bond, Ian James Bond, at home on the 12th of August, aged 58. Brimmel, Hazel Brimmel, at Flowerdown Nursing Home on the 9th of August, aged 90. Cruden, Sydney Cruden. Cutting, Roger Percy Cutting, in Countess Mountbatten House on the 6th of August, aged 65. Ferris, Sheila Ann Ferris, on the 7th of August, at home, aged 78. Hardacre, John Allen Hardacre, in hospital on the 5th of August, aged 61. Kavanagh, Mick Kavanagh, on the 7th of August, aged 65. McCorkindale, Kate Philippa McCorkindale, née Johnson, aged 48, on the 8th of August at the Garden House Hospice, Letchworth Garden City. Rogers, Maggie Rogers, on the 7th of August, aged 66, of the Lodge, Magdalen Hill. And Spencer, Tom Spencer, on the 11th of August, aged 88. Now next we have Christian Comment.
Christian Comment is headed "A Power Beyond Ourselves." "Join in," said the sail light banners outside Winchester Guildhall, and you could fail to know, no one could fail to know that they were inviting us to join in with, and what? To their great credit, the City Council gave us every encouragement, providing two big screens in the cathedral grounds to watch the games on. On the Sunday afternoon when Andy Murray won gold for Great Britain at Wimbledon, a roar went up that could be heard from far and wide. Joining in can happen at a number of levels. Those watching on the television at home participate passively. There are truly moving moments which reduce us all, interviewers including, to tears. We shall long remember the exhausted silver medal rowers apologising for letting the country down. But however emotional things can become, we remain spectators of events. There will be those who begin to dream of pitching in themselves. A young boy rowing with his grandfather in a park lake, barely managing to find the water with his oars, was heard to say to his grandfather, "Perhaps I'll be in the Olympics next time. Maybe the time after." The woman boxer who won Britain's first gold in her class was only 12 when she started dreaming. However, one way of enjoying joining in and succeeding in their great dream is simple. Have an energy audit. Each could ask the basic question, what are we doing with our human energies and how can we strengthen them? Our best energies are a precious commodity. From the day we are born to the day we die, we have them at our disposal. We have an instinct that they are meant for a greater cause than ourselves. The athletes on the podium stand there proudly, not as individuals, but representatives of their nation. Our energies beg the question of where we should invest them to bring about a lasting result. But our natural energies can be expanded. Our spirit, our vitality, can join in with the energies of God's spirit. We can be strengthened and encouraged. We can be uplifted and inspired by an energy beyond our own resources. If we are open to the source and prepared to walk in its flow. The most active way of joining in, then, is to take up into a power beyond ourselves. It is for good reason that the divine energy is described as the mighty rushing wind. Those who seek to sail by it can better be prepared to make waves. Canon Rowley Ream.
Before we move on to the letters, I'm going to read a piece from Belgarum's diary, which relate to the first two letters that will be read out, and it's entitled Names from the Past. Belgarum has fielded calls and letters about the past of a Winchester shop. In a piece of retail archaeology, the name Town and Country recently appeared in City Road after a modern facio was removed. It prompted Belgarum to inquire if anyone could remember anything about it. Several residents with good memories obliged. Phil Yates, who lives just around the corner, recalls, in the 1950s, it was E.S. Atwood, Ladies and Gents Hairdressers. By 1964, a local directory said it was just Atwood's Ladies Hairdressers. By 1971, it was Town and Country Ladies Fashion and Hairdressers. I remember Betty Atwood, the daughter. John Murray of Shelley Close said E.S. Atwood was run by his wife Sheila's great-aunt and uncle before Betty took it over. Mr. Murray has good reason to remember it. My wife and I left for our honeymoon from their flat above the shop in 1966. Colin Rose of Lower Brook Street, but formerly of Victoria Road, Hyde, recalls that when Town and Country closed, it was split into two shops, including some kind of model shop. The article also evoked memories for Mrs. L. Evans of Fair Oak, who worked at Town and Country as an apprentice hairdresser in 1967. June Hobbs of Tegdown Meads remembers it as just a ladies' hairdresser's and not a fashion shop. She and her mother were regular customers back in the 1940s. Several people recall the ladies' fashion shop next door called Clemo's, where the sweet shop is now. Lewis Pennycook of High Street remembers Clemo's. His late wife Muriel worked at its Eastleigh branch as a teenager in the mid-1930s. Several people have cited Warren's and Kelly's street directories. Mr. Yates said, these directories are valuable now. The number of high street shops still around from those days you can count on the fingers of one hand, he says. So, says Belgarum, here goes. 1, Marks and Spencer's. 2, Rawling Opticians. 3, Warren's. Any others? So this will doubtless provoke some letters. Right, we now move on to the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. I say the first two letters relate to this bit about retail archaeology.
And this first letter is, in fact, from Phil Yates, who was referred to in that Belgarum piece then. Sir, re Roger Farrell's letter, Chronicle, August the 9th, about number 16 Jury Street and the words King and Co. on the doorstep. They were grocers and were followed by two Winchester families in the same trade. Firstly, F. Croft and Son, Fred being the father and Reg the son, and then Hubert Smith and Son, Hubert the father, Harold the son. Going back further, the premises were occupied by Simkins and Sons, house furnishers and decorators, upholsterers and undertakers, as indicated by an 1898 advertisement. The firm was founded by John Simkins, whose son, John Jr., and brother James later built the Theatre Royal, which they opened in 1914. It's still going strong today. The present proprietors, Prezzo, could take a leaf out of their near neighbours, Brasserie Blanc. Here they have a framed photograph showing the upper floor being used as British restaurant during the Second World War, known locally as King Alfred's Kitchen. They have retained the original tiling and rails, complete with hooks when this part of the restaurant was Co-op Butchers. I'm sure Prezzo could come up with something similar. A visit to Hampshire Record Office is well worth thinking about. Regarding Louise Musselwhite's letter concerning 25 City Road, this was not Clemo's, who were at number 27. And that's from Phil Yates, a local historian, Tower Street, Winchester.
And this letter is from June R. Hobbs, who also wrote in the previous edition. This one's entitled, I Can Recall All These Winchester Shops. Sir, further my letter of August the 3rd, Belgarum Diary, your letters page of August the 9th does not clear up the question of businesses in City Road. Town and Country, at number 25, was not a building society, but a ladies' hairdresser. Clemo's, next door at number 27, City Road, was a milliner's originally in 1942. It then became a fashion shop and was still trading in 1974. It was not only for the mature lady. I, for one, was really disappointed when it closed down. In my 20s, I bought a cardigan there, which I still have today, over 50 years later. The shop next door, on the corner of Sussex Street, was the City Road Post Office in 1942. It was at the back of the grocer's Hubert Smith, later R. Smith. This still existed in 1974, according to Kelly's directory. Read Jury Street, in the same issue. The shop at number 16 with the sign King & Co. was a high-class grocer. In 1942, it was owned by R. F. Croft & Co., while by 1974, the owners were W. H. Cullen. I'm not just relying on information from directories, as I can remember all of these shops. And that's Mrs. June R. Hobbs of Take Down Meads in Winchester.
Don't stop there. Sir, in answer to the question, will I be shopping at Aldi? The answer will be a very big yes. I only wish it was sooner. Great store, great value, and it will help to bring other stores into line. It's about time that people in this city had a greater choice of shopping prices, instead of being ripped off by the few. Perhaps we might get a Lidl's as well, and a B&Q. Peter Holloway, Springvale, Winchester.
This letter on the same theme is from Roger Grewcock, and he says, brand snobbery is a costly conspiracy. Sir, the brand snobbery laid bare by the juxtaposition of Waitrose and Aldi in Week is another unelevating contour on the map of British social topography. Not only do the haves want other haves to know they have by being seen to be shopping at Waitrose, they also do not wish to be reminded by the presence of an Aldi that there are indeed a lot of have-nots. But the snobs thus show their ignorance of the way modern retailers exploit them, retailers to whom all money is the same colour. On entering any of the big stores, anybody who also shops at Aldi or their direct competitor, Lidl, becomes aware immediately of the softly manipulative buying environment and of the coercive ways of presentation used by Waitrose, Sainsbury's, et al. To encourage you to spend. Everything is part of a costly conspiracy whose aim is to extract more of your hard-earned than you had intended. The cut-price stores, whilst maintaining quality, don't mesmerise us with brand image and added value, and the shopper doesn't have to pay for it. But if you are happy to pay premium prices day after day to prove to your friends just how disposable your income is, then the stores will carry on posting them. That's from Roger Grewcock, Ashdown Close, Chandler's Ford.
And David Selby of South Wanston writes that it would be safer on the hard shoulder. Sir, a major way to make it safer for cyclists is to separate them from the motor vehicles as far as possible, and this does not mean drawing white lines a metre in from the kerb. In urban areas, cars park in these spaces, leaving cyclists to make the dangerous manoeuvre around a parked vehicle, with the possibility of being knocked off by drivers carelessly opening their doors. In rural areas, as on the newly built A43 past Silverstone, I have not seen any cyclists on the metre-wide strip as vehicles whiz along at motorway speeds. In fact, they would be safer on the motorway hard shoulder. I always wear a helmet just in case I hit a pothole and come off and it would protect my head. But nothing would protect my head if hit by a car or a 40-ton truck. I have cycled in Holland on a tarmac path through a cultivated field, but South Wanston Parish Council makes no such demands over its long-standing proposal that footpaths from the village could be converted to a pedestrian cycle path into Winchester, thus avoiding the high-speed, narrow road past the village into the city, where trees and bushes are allowed to overhang, pushing cyclists further into the road, and there is not even room for a metre-wide strip. We know from the village plan that at the time of publication there were more cycles in South Wanston than there were cars, but this is not apparent to those living here. Would the powers that be please take note of the parish council proposal and make an effort to implement it, at least in part, to start with? And that was from David Selby, parish councillor of South Wanston, the Ridding, West Hill Road North, South Wanston.
Why don't cyclists use the cycle lane? Sir, having read the article about Hampshire being worst county for cycle injuries, Chronicle August the 9th, I, for one, am not surprised. On my journey to work, I travel along Winchester Road, Chandler's Ford. This is a very busy road in the mornings with cars, vans, lorries and buses trying to get somewhere, and on occasion we all come to a slow crawl. Is it an accident? Is it the volume of traffic? No, it's a cyclist holding everyone up, which angers me, and I'll tell you why. It is the sight of a grown man wearing lycra. No, it's a silly piece of plastic sticking out from his bike. No, it's the fact that a couple of metres to the side of this inconsiderate bike rider there is a cycle lane which is empty. This lane that has been paid for by me and other taxpayers and has been built at great expense by our local council, especially for cyclists. Now, if cyclists do not wish to have exhaust blown over their white socks or spit in their dummies out when we get too close, use the cycle lanes, then you and your lycra will be happy and safe. Graham Brown, Chandler's Ford.
This letter from Miss Helen Thompson is entitled "It's High Time England Kicked the Plastic Bag Habit." Sir, the number of single-use bags handed out in the United Kingdom has gone up again over the past 2 years. In 2011, we used 8 billion plastic carrier bags, or 254 per second. This is a tremendous waste of valuable resources, which often results in litter and can be lethal to wildlife on land and at sea. Sadly, this is a very English problem. England is where the growth in bag use is happening, and we are the only country in the UK that does not require shops to charge for bags and isn't actively considering introducing a charge. When Wales introduced a 5p levy in 2011, single-use bag use fell by between 70 and 96%. Ireland did it in 2002, and the number of single-use bags fell by 90%, as well as the amount of bag litter. Some shops are already doing this voluntarily, but the only way to make a real difference is for the government to make sure England is not left behind and introduce a bag levy. The money can even be spent on clearing litter, not making shops money, as happens in Wales. That is why I am supporting the Break the Bag Habit campaign, run by the Campaign to Protect Rural England, Keep Britain Tidy, the Marine Conservation Society, and Surfers Against Sewage. It's simple to add your voice to this campaign by visiting their websites and writing to your MP. That's from Miss Helen Thompson, the Ridings, Liss.
This letter is from Carl McIver of Abbots Barton, saying, "Hasn't our patch suffered enough? Sir, I read with disappointment, but not surprise, that yet further plans are being put together by our council to remove more green areas of Winchester, this time by building new council houses on the limited green areas by Abbots Barton. These help protect the parish from becoming another ugly housing estate, with no space and lots of jammed up people and cars. Plus, they provide a playground and recreation area for children, families, dog walkers and many others. Has our patch not suffered enough, with the new estate being built and its proposed linking to Abbots Barton to provide a car park for the new residents? Why wasn't that site used for the new council housing? Why are they not merging the plans right now as the estate is being built? Why not use the land at the bottom of the new build, which is still under consideration on what to do with it? I would ask the council, if they are all in favour, to answer the above questions first before they make any concrete plans." And that was from Carl McIver, Cavendish Grove, Abbots Barton in Winchester.
Victor Lord Durham, "Sir, if Peter Simmons College was a country, its three Olympic medals would make it 35th amongst the most successful in the world, ahead of 170 other nations. Harvey Cole, Clifton Road, Winchester."
Christopher Gordon is talking about being mugged by their coalition partners. "Sir, George Hollingbury MP is, quote, a little bemused, unquote, by the decision to drop proposed House of Commons boundary changes," Chronicle, August the 9th. "Perhaps a voter's perspective might help clear up his perplexity. Contrary to what is disingenuously claimed, that the alternative vote reform referendum was delivered and boundary changes never had anything to do with Lords reform, these are the root causes. The Conservatives failed to win the 2010 general election, even if their right to rule mindset is increasingly asserting itself on restive Tory backbenches. Whatever the small print of their agreement, the Lib Dem price for sharing power included a package deal on initiating overdue constitutional reform. Cameron welched on his pledge to remain neutral over AV reform and condoned a dirty negative campaign. Now his backbenchers have made any Lords reform impossible, whatever the quality of the actual proposals. So it's sauce for the gander time. Conservative MPs have ensured the two elements that didn't favour their vested interests have been killed off, but now cry foul for not getting the one that clearly does. Had the changes been operational in 2010, the Tories would have had a clear majority on just 36% of the national vote. Why would the Lib Dems sign up to that, given they've now been mugged by their coalition partners on both other fronts? Local government has been systematically emasculated since the mid-1970s, only possible in this country because of its weird lack of a proper constitution. The Conservatives are only interested in piecemeal reforms that would benefit them. The Lib Dems at least tried to introduce the possibility of some progressive politics to the UK. Boundary reform with no change in the voting system looks like gerrymandering for short-term gain. Justification on the grounds that fewer constituencies will make Parliament cheaper to run while the Lords will remain bloated is casuistry of the most risible kind. That letter is from Christopher Gordon, Corns Close, Winchester.
And Penny Thomas writes, "Great night, but..." Sir, what a great atmosphere in Winchester Cathedral grounds on Sunday night for the closing ceremony. The Olympics have left the whole country feeling upbeat and proud. So, why, as people departed, did so many leave litter all over the grass? Come on, guys. Self-responsibility and pride, please. And don't kid yourselves that this keeps someone in work. All the values demonstrated during the Olympics are the things that create a great and prosperous society, not deprivation and carelessness. And that was from Penny Thomas of Hyde Street in Winchester.
Council homes are vital to healthy society. Sir, I'm very grateful to the council, to the Chronicle, for the level of coverage afforded to the City Council's new building programme. The ability to be able to build the first new council houses in 25 years is an incredibly exciting and important prospect. For maximum benefit, it will be essential that people back the project wholeheartedly, and I welcome anyone who has any views or questions. I hope residents will not hesitate to express their thoughts either to me or through the media. New housing developments have long carried a degree of stigma about them. Yet the very foundation of any stable community is decent and affordable housing. That said, we don't serve our communities well if we destroy what is so valuable by them. However, provision of good quality housing is vital to all healthy societies. That's Ian Tate, WCC portfolio holder, New Homes Delivery.
That concludes the letters to the editor of the Hampshire Chronicle. We now have some items of historical interest. We have them from 100 years ago, 50 years ago and 25 years ago.
And this first one is 100 years ago in 1912. Subject to the approval of the Board of Agriculture and Fisheries, the County Council is to purchase, for a sum not exceeding £5,300, 264 acres of land in Sparsholt, forming part of Westley Farm, for a farm school, and to pay the costs to be incurred in connection therewith on the certificate of the Clerk of the Council. Application will be made to the Local Government Board to borrow the sum of £5,400 for the purchase mentioned in the foregoing resolution.
And 50 years ago, in 1962, bold and imaginative planning is to be given to Basingstoke in equipping the market town for the big influx of population and industry scheduled for the next 15 years. The futuristic plans disclosed this week will make the town the most modern in the south, with use being made of a natural valley to create shops in the sky, a pedestrian shopping centre built on a 23-foot-high platform, high above the rush and roar of traffic.
from the files 25 years ago. Winchester City Council is to review its decision to support the Department of Transport's route from the M3 and pay consultants to up to £10,000 to look into building a tunnel under Twyford Down. The surprise decision was taken last Thursday at the Planning Committee. However, the item is not on the main agenda, leading some members to suggest that officers do not want it to be publicised. Planning Committee Chairman Mrs. Pat Edwards is said to have specifically asked for it to be listed.
Next, we have the editorial comment, Chronicle comment. That will be followed by letter from Westminster from our MP, and then it will be first person.
This is editorial comment, and it's entitled First Class Prices for Second Class Service. Imagine running a business that can put up the cost it charges customers by twice the rate of inflation because the government tells it to. Imagine that having done so, it won't drive its customers away to cheaper competitors because there aren't any. Welcome to the world of train operators. On the face of it, it's understandable to want to shift more of the cost of running our railway network from taxpayers to the people who use the service. But it's not as simple as that. Statistics show that taxpayers are actually paying more today to finance our railways than when they were state-owned. And what are we getting for all this money? Overcrowding, a lack of seats, short trains, no trains, leaves on the line, and the wrong kind of snow. And yet commuters from Winchester will have to find another £271 for their annual season tickets from next January, a 6.2% rise, an eye-watering £4,643. Providing a fast, efficient, clean and safe railway system costs a lot, but ultimately we all benefit, whether we use it daily, occasionally or not at all. We all have to pay our share if we want to see Britain have a railway infrastructure fit for the 21st century. But it's time rail users and taxpayers saw a return on our investment.
And Westminster Diary is by Steve Brine, MP for Winchester and Chandler's Ford. As I write this month's column, it is starting to rain a little, and I think, like many of you, I have a bit of an Olympics hangover. That said, a hangover usually means you had a great time, and I cannot fault London 2012 for the organisation, the spirit, and above all, the performance of Team GB. There has been much talk of legacy around these games. Indeed, London in part won the right to host them because its legacy presentation was so strong, and that has to be right. For what it's worth, I think London's legacy should go three ways. Firstly, we mustn't think we need a new 10-year plan and start with a blank sheet of paper. We are self-evidently doing many things right, and we should continue to channel significant sums of lottery cash, some £125 million a year, to back sports development across our country. John Major is, wrongly in my view, much derided as a Prime Minister, but his decision to make the National Lottery happen, something not backed by everyone at the time, if you recall, was shown to be spot on this past fortnight. Secondly, we should use the incredible success of Team GB's athletes to remind young people, my kids included, that real success and achievement today does not come from overnight success in a reality TV show. Thirdly, we should ensure our schools remain places where sport is strongly encouraged and talent is spotted. And we should be clear, it is out with the bureaucratic, anti-risk, all-must-have-prizes culture, which has led to the death of competitive sport in too many schools, and in with the belief that competition is healthy, that winning and losing is an important part of growing up. If I can be really greedy and steal another legacy cookie from the jar, I would love London 2012 to be the moment when the cynics got behind Great Britain and accepted that our best days as a country are not behind us. The lesson of these past weeks for me is that Britain can and should be ambitious. Closer to home, my summer tour concludes this week with a street surgery in Oliver's Battery and a special surgery in Sutton Scotney Fire Station. The 2012 tour has been just brilliant, and I hope constituents have found it useful to have their MP come to them. I will remember for a long time a scorching hot day in Twyford last week, where I held a surgery at the parish hall as part of the tour, and we had a queue for the full 2 hours. Full details of this year's events and all the pictures via stevebryne.com/summertour12. As ever, much more online at stevebryne.com or my office via 01962 791 110. That's 01962 791 110. You can now also access me via my iPhone app, which can be downloaded for free via my homepage.
First person, George Hayter. I'm not going near the edge. My health-conscious wife says she wants to live by the sea, but I'm not so keen. I have a deep-rooted fear of setting up home on the coast, born of seeing that old film about D-Day. The black-and-white footage has instilled in me the feeling that if you live anywhere near a beach, you're the first person to be shot in an invasion. Such neurotic reasoning carries little weight with my completely sane wife, who only asks to be near enough to salt water to be able to take a short walk and then plunge in. She is more impressed by financial considerations, however, and admits a home by the sea would cost a lot. I think she also appreciates that the number of days when the temperature is high enough for a swim is very small in this country. Judging by the wind-imposed stooping adopted by trees at Milford-on-Sea, a coastal address is also likely to be too breezy for my taste. I have no evidence for this, but I also believe that snow rarely falls by the sea. As a lover of snow-covered scenery and as a secret fan of the disruption that snow brings, I don't see that as another coastal disadvantage. A further psychiatric reason for balking at any seaweed shift is my dislike of being on the edge of things. It makes me feel sort of left out. And I've never been able to enjoy the maritime horizon with its straight line and its emptiness. I'll take the Alps, Manhattan or St. Catherine's Hill any old time. But my main argument is this. Living by the sea means only half the normal amount of land is accessible. Unless you own a boat, you can only head out along one of 180 degrees, rather than the full 360. That is an intolerable 50% reduction in town and country available for exploration and enjoyment. Lymington is a classic example of coastal disconnection. It's a lovely historic town with nice surrounding countryside in a half circle around it. But Lymington motorists, wanting to go almost anywhere else in Britain, have no realistic choice of route. They have to use the same old snail pace of the A337, which has a level crossing at Brockenhurst and the infamous bottleneck at Lyndhurst. Just as isolated are coastal people who live at the far end of a peninsula, such as those in Gosport, which is cut off by the traffic-choked A32, and Hamble Le Rice, victims of the torturous B3397. No, give me landlocked central Hampshire any day. Those of us who live around Winchester or Eastleigh are lucky. We're close to the M3 and fully joined to the rest of the UK. We can really go places. We enjoy hilly horizons all around. And I'll feel like a dip. We can go to a swimming pool.
We now move on to items of general news interest.
Bars closure was due to high rents. High rents forced a popular Winchester bar to close, according to the former owner. Andy Heller, who co-owned Jury Street bar Plain and Fancy with Tory Cahill, said the business could not cope with £40,000 per year rent and the economic downturn. Mr. Heller, 24, left his management role in the business in March to start a new company in Hythe near Southampton, but retained his stake in the company. He said, "When we opened in August 2009, everything went well, and it was one of the most popular bars in town. But it's needlessly expensive to run a business in Winchester. I have a similar sized unit in Hythe to the one we had in Winchester, but at about a quarter of the rent. It is ridiculous what you are expected to pay in rent in Winchester. By the time I left, things needed to change, and I could sense that the economic downturn was not going to be getting any better, and that the costs of running a solely alcohol-related business in Winchester were too high to be viable." Chris Turner, Executive Director of Winchester Business Improvement District, said the organisation was nervous about business rent increases in the city. He said, "We do have a sense that rent in Winchester is going up more speedily than it ought to. I'm very sorry to see Plain and Fancy go, but another problem is that Jury Street is full of bars, so there's a lot of competition. But there's a feeling that there is still profit to be made in Winchester, as businesses are queuing up to take over empty units." Mr. Heller, who lives in Chandler's Ford, now runs Catered, a business that provides recipe boxes across Southampton, Eastleigh and Winchester, which contain all the ingredients for a specific meal. He said, "I was brought up around the family meal, and hopefully the Catered option will give this time back to the family home. I feel it's important to learn basic culinary skills, but sometimes the shopping for ingredients in huge supermarkets is not only daunting, but majorly off-putting. We source locally where possible, and all our recipes come with all the ingredients and the method to cook it too. We offer anything from simple bangers and mash to homemade chicken liver pate and breakfasts through to desserts and snacks."
Town will benefit from coffee chain. Costa aims to fit in with local businesses in Bishop's Waltham. A national coffee chain has insisted that Bishop's Waltham will benefit from having one of its shops in the market town. Costa Coffee is set to open a new branch in the town later this month. The Hampshire Chronicle reported in June that Realis Estates had successfully applied to change the use of former High Street clothes store Annabelle from retail to mixed use, despite protests from local retailers. Colin Dyke, regional manager for Costa, said, "Some people think we're taking over the town, but there are only 35 seats with a bit of room outside. We offer a shop where mums and kids can visit and shop. We're looking to fit into the community." But Tony Kippenberger, vice chairman of the Bishop's Waltham Society, speaking at the time, said, "We need our independence, otherwise it becomes another clone High Street, and what's the point of coming to Bishop's Waltham? We have got enough coffee shops, and it takes away a shop that should be a retail shop. I suspect they're coming because Sainsbury's are coming. I'm sure others will follow." Mr. Dyke said, "We've already recruited 5 new members of staff in the Bishop's Waltham area. 3 are 16-year-olds, which is great for those guys that they've got jobs in their town." In the past, Costa, the largest coffee chain in the UK, has faced accusations that it operated shops at a loss in order to force competitors out of the market. But Mr. Dyke said, "I can promise that's not the case. We are definitely not here to close other shops. The town's other coffee shops have loyal customers who they'll keep. It's just not something I'd even consider." Some scepticism remains, however, about the need for the coffee shop, with former councillor Dorothy Quinney saying, "Bishop's Waltham needs a Costa like it needs a hole in the head." The Costa dispute follows on the heels of the recent planning battle in the town over a new Sainsbury's in Station Road, with action groups formed both for and against the plan. Permission to build the supermarket was only given on the casting vote of the chairman of the City Council's planning committee. Sainsbury will provide 350 jobs, and it also includes a new doctor's surgery. A start date for construction has not yet been set, but the company is looking to open next year. Costa Coffee is due to open on Wednesday, August the 22nd.
Legal London, an eye-opener for law students. Many of the 150 A-level law students from Peter Simmons College go on to study the subject at top universities around the country, whilst maintaining links with those who first introduced them to their love of the subject. One student, Tom Webb, now a barrister, came back as part of the Careers Higher Education programme to talk about the skills required in the profession today. He stressed the importance of key criminal principles of actus reus and mens reus, as well as instructing them on how to make speeches in court. Turning the tables, he had them preparing and practising these new skills before getting them to stand up in front of the audience while receiving support and feedback from him on their efforts. "I was hugely impressed with their effort and enthusiasm," said Tom, who achieved an upper second degree at Exeter University. "They were a pleasure to work with." His visit was closely followed by a trip to London to visit the Royal Courts of Justice and the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom. Here, the students were able to witness an important commercial case in Court 1. For some, this was the first time at an appeal hearing, and for many, of their first taste of a real London legal practice. They seemed awed and humbled by the enormity of the prestige of the institutions. "I found the experience incredibly interesting," said A2 law student George Weston. "It's given me a real insight into how the law works, and it's nice to know the work we are doing really is relevant to what happened in courtrooms all over the country."
This is a story, it doesn't have a headline, but it's about a supermarket donation. A supermarket has donated £15,000 to Stockbridge Recreation Ground Trust and Stockbridge Football Club, thanks to its community support scheme. The Southern Cooperative Community Support Card, CSC, scheme is run in selected Southern Co-op stores. It enables local communities to raise funds by presenting a CSC card, issued free by the participating store, every time they purchase goods in-store. The more customers use the card, the more quickly funds are raised. Each year, local good causes wanting to apply for the funding can submit a bid, and recipient causes are chosen by a panel of local people working with the Southern Cooperative Store team. David Webb, chairman of Stockbridge Recreation Ground Trust and president of Stockbridge Football Club, said, "The recreation ground is used by many people and is a very important part of the village community. We'll be using the money to improve our changing rooms, public and disabled toilets, and the £15,000 will go a long way towards the total of £120,000 cost of the project."
And get involved, Hampshire teenagers are told. Teenagers in Winchester are being urged by the government to support their communities. Whitehall's flagship Nation Citizen Service, NCS, programme is trying to recruit 96 young people to suggest community projects such as fundraising for a hospital or renovating a skate park. Local businesses and charities will also pitch ideas to the students and engage them in schemes. This year's NCS programme is run by Solent Education Business Partnership, SEBP, at the Base Point Business Centre in Winnell Manor Road. Rebecca Powell, centre manager, said, "The NCS programme is fantastic and one that we are delighted to be involved with. The students will be based at Base Point Winchester for a week, and companies located at the centre have agreed to talk to the group, offering tips on communication and CV writing. Schemes like this are a great way for the next generation of employees to start thinking about what they want to do when they leave school and get access to business advice firsthand from employers. The programme is open to 16 and 17-year-olds from Winchester, Eastleigh and the New Forest."
Hotels just wild about joining the spectacular Rhino Trail. Winchester Hotels welcomed one of its most exotic guests as it joined the charge to be part of an unforgettable summer. The Holiday Inn in Winchester has become the second business to be part of a rhino-shaped public art craze that will be sweeping across Hampshire in 2013. Brightly coloured life-size rhinos will be popping up in streets and parks across Southampton next summer as part of Marwell's Wildlife's Go Rhinos event to celebrate its 40th anniversary. The rhino will join many other sculptures to create a spectacular trail around the city and will not only raise awareness of the plight of rhinos in the wild, but will also boost the city's economy and provide families with a great day out. Siobhan Thomas, from the General Manager of Holiday Inn Winchester, said, "We are delighted to be part of such a creative event. It's a great opportunity for the community to come together, raise important funds for charities, and have great fun completing the stunning trail. The Holiday Inn joins the Agus Bowl, which led to the stampede to get involved. But Marwell's Wildlife is urging more businesses and schools to get on board and help to make this a huge success. And there's a picture of the staff at the Holiday Inn welcoming the rhino to Winchester."
Southern Water fined £12,000. Southern Water has been fined more than £12,000 after supplying water unfit for human consumption in Chandler's Ford. It came after repair work on pipes in March 2011 led to brown-coloured water being supplied to residents in Burley Down. 29 customers reported the discoloured water coming from their taps, which was caused by iron and manganese deposits in the pipes when disturbed by the work. The company pleaded guilty at Aldershot Magistrates to the charge brought against it by the Drinking Water Inspectorate, DWI. It was fined £12,000, ordered to pay a £15 victim surcharge, and to pay costs of more than £14,000. Professor Jenny Colburn, Chief Inspector of the DWI, said Southern Water failed to act on its own risk assessment or carry out adequate investigations. Southern Water Quality and Strategy Manager Mayrick Goff said, "Improvements have been made to our internal processes to reduce the risk of a similar incident happening again."
And this is about the sweet smell of success for lavender growers. An Alsford business has been providing the lavender used in the Olympic bouquets awarded to all medal winners. Long Barn Growers and Distillers, based on Bishop Sutton Road, have supplied 300,000 stems grown in Hampshire and used in some 4,000 bouquets. As well as being waved aloft by the likes of Jessica Ennis, Chris Hoy and Michael Phelps, The bouquets will also be used in the Paralympics later this month. Richard Norris, Long Barn director, said, "We were flattered to be approached last year, but as the date got closer, we became quite nervous. The wet spring and summer meant that the lavender flowered later than normal, and we had to harvest the first batch in the rain, which is not ideal. However, for the start of the Games, the sun was shining, and we were able to complete the harvest in near-perfect conditions. The lavender is grown near Oslebury and has been combined with English roses, wheat, mint and rosemary in a design by Jane Packer." And this is accompanied by two delightful photos, one of Jane Marsden and Richard Norris, the Long Barn directors, in an enormous field of lavender, wearing a matching lavender dress and carrying a huge basket overflowing with lavender stems. But the other is of the Hampshire sailor, Ben Ainslie of Lymington and Peter Simmons School, celebrating winning his fourth Olympic gold medal, clutching a bouquet containing lavender provided by Long Barn.
Harsh winters will hit heathland bird. An iconic bird of the Hampshire heathland has been dramatically declining in numbers over the past few years. The Dartford warbler resident, unlike almost all other warblers, has suffered a major setback with just 50 pairs reported across areas of Hampshire, Berkshire, Surrey and Sussex. The Royal Society for the Protection of Birds has reported, the RSPB said, "It was thought that the bird pictured right, which is a lovely photograph of a warbler, had declined during the last few years because of the harsh winters leading up to 2010. It said 75% of heathland, which supports a range of wildlife, including threatening UK breeding bird populations, has been lost, but there was potential to restore some of them."
Binky's celebrity fan. Winchester's homegrown literary creation is attracting some star readers. Dame Judy Dench perused the latest Binky book, Binky in Trouble, whilst waiting to go on stage at the Theatre Royal in the recent Best of British Festival. Author Moira Blackwell, who, like co-author Liz Nankivell, lives in Alsford, said, "I handed Dame Judy the book, and as she turned the pages, she looked up and exclaimed, 'I think this is a delightful book, a lovely combination of words and pictures.'" Moira said she was genuinely surprised at her spontaneous response and clicked her camera shutter to record the moment. Meanwhile, the book continues to challenge the top of the sales lists for children's books at Waterstones in Winchester. Portsmouth-based Igloo Films is making a short animated film which is due to be launched on a Binky channel on YouTube in September. And there is a photograph accompanying this article of Dame Judy Dench with the book Binky in Trouble.
And this is about a meeting about Cornerways. A public meeting is being held next week into the future of a Winchester care home. The County Council has threatened to close Cornerways in Church Lane, Kingsworthy, claiming it is no longer fit for purpose. If the closure goes ahead, 51 vulnerable residents aged 74 to 101 would be forced to move home and 111 jobs would be axed. But Unison says the council has £300 million in its reserves it could use to bring the care home up to standard. The meeting, organised by Unison, takes place at Chapel Hall in Fraser Road, Kingsworthy, at 6:30 p.m. on Tuesday, August the 21st. It is one of three care homes under threat, alongside Addenbrooke in Gosport and Thurlston in Fleet.
Dumper stolen. Thieves made off with a dumper truck worth £10,000 from an industrial site near Winchester. The Thwaites high-tip truck, pictured here, and it's bright yellow with big wheels, was taken from the estate in Church Lane, Colden Common, after the intruders accessed the site by forcing the gates open. PC Jonathan Earnshaw said, "Do you know anyone who has recently acquired a dumper truck like this one that has been stolen, or have you been offered one for sale? The tipper has a black bucket on the front, which is quite rare. I would urge anyone with any information, no matter how small, to come forward and speak to us at our information centre. Could be significant and could help us to find those responsible. Anyone with information should contact PC Earnshaw at Bishop's Waltham Police Station."
Hyde Abbey panel replaced. A piece of Winchester artwork has been restored 2 years after it was destroyed by vandals. Friends of Hyde Abbey Garden have installed a new £7,500 commemorative glass panel in the garden, which shows the historic church. It follows 2 years of fundraising after the original was smashed in July 2010. The group is now keen to increase security at the garden near River Park Leisure Centre and is hoping CCTV cameras can be installed. The group is to celebrate the return of the artwork later this summer with a party at Hyde Parish Hall. The panel, which has been strengthened to help withstand any future vandalism, was again designed by local artist Tracy Shepherd, who has also made glasswork for Winchester Cathedral and Rumsey Abbey.
Well-travelled David bows out after 3 decades. Head of art, David Thomas, has retired from Peter Simmons College, Winchester, after 29 years of service. He started there in 1983 when there were 900 students and the threat of falling rolls. But that did not happen, and the college, now with a student population of over 3,000, continues to be one of the top academically successful colleges in the whole of the UK. David brought with him a wealth of worldwide experience, having journeyed on the Trans-Siberian Railway in his youth and worked in Japan, where he taught English and met his wife, Sasha. After qualifying as a teacher, he spent 6 years at the Hardley School, Holbury, before making his life at Peter Simmons. David praised the college that had given him such a wonderful career and especially valued the support of his colleagues in the vibrant art department, which under his leadership encompasses not just fine art, but photography, textiles and three-dimensional design, sculpture. He has lots of plans for the future, including painting, travelling and spending more time with his grandchildren.
Horse effort rescues stuck horse. Firefighters rescued a horse after it became trapped in its box. The horse became stuck when it was spooked and tried to jump over a partition into the motorised horse box driving along the B335 in Twyford last Thursday. The owner pulled over after hearing a noise and then discovered the 3-year-old cob's predicament. Appliances from Winchester and Eastleigh attended around 5 p.m, while an animal rescue team from Lyndhurst was also on the scene. Vet David Langrish heavily sedated the horse before crews could cut the partition away. Jim Green, an animal rescue specialist, said, "This was a very dangerous scene when the horse did not have much room to manoeuvre and was becoming very distressed. Its legs were balanced on the edge of the box and it had to be stepped back any further. If it had stepped back any further, it would have fallen, becoming further distressed and potentially causing further injury. This incident further reinforces Hampshire's successful rescue initiative, which involves training vets and firefighters to work seamlessly to resolve incidents involving large animals. We are very grateful to vet David Langrish for his prompt attendance and the action on the day."
Exhibition tells of Olympics in Hampshire. People can find out more about the Olympics, both past and most recently, at a free exhibition at the Hampshire Record Office in Winchester until September the 1st. The Olympics in Hampshire showcases Olympians and Paralympians with a link to the county, such as 400-metre runner Ewan Thomas of Southampton, judo medalist Kate Howie of Andover, swimmer Rosalinda Hardiman of Portsmouth, and historic figures such as 1932 gold medalist Tommy Green of Eastleigh and cycling champion Charles Kingsbury of Portsmouth. Venues used for the 1908 and 1948 games in Aldershot, Church Crookham, Portsmouth and Southampton are explored, as well as information on the Olympic torch route through Hampshire in 1948, including a local link to the lighting ceremony itself. Hampshire and the Olympic Games, a local history of a global event, is open Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m, 7 p.m. on Thursdays, Saturday, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m, but it's closed on August 27th.
And this one tells that householders are offered free insulation. Winchester Action on Climate Change, WINAC, is launching a scheme to help residents insulate their homes this autumn. It has teamed up with Insulate Hampshire to provide free rolls of DIY insulation across the city in September. Insulate Hampshire is funded by Scottish Power and is working in partnership with both the city and county councils. Erin Mills, Community Coordinator for Insulate Hampshire, said, "WINAC does a lot of good work around saving energy. It therefore made sense to collaborate with them to reduce Winchester's carbon footprint and help local residents save money on rising fuel bills. Residents can register at winac.org.uk to collect their free insulation in September from a venue to be announced."
Ben's Gold Legend. Former Peter Simmons student Ben Ainslie has been hailed a sporting icon after becoming the most successful Olympic sailor ever. Ainslie's victory in the Finn class took his tally to 4 gold medals and 1 silver in consecutive games, eclipsing the achievements of the Danish sailing legend Paul Elvestrøm. Ainslie is renowned for his tenacity and calmness under pressure, but even he admitted the road to the top position was no walkover. The medal races in Weymouth all used the course close inshore by the spectator area, with its tricky and unpredictable wind shifts coming across Portland Harbour and over the North Headland. Nonetheless, he held off a strong challenge from Danish competitor Jan Haag Christiansen to step into sailing history. There was huge disappointment for fellow former Peter Simmons student Ian Percy, sailing with Andrew Simpson in the star class, who was narrowly beaten into silver position in the final race. Competing at this level, strategy and tactics are often as important as boat speed. Going into the medal race as favourite, the pair concentrated on covering the Brazilian team at the expense of letting through the Swedes.
In the Village News Roundup section of the Chronicle is this piece about St Matthew's Church. St Matthew's Church in Stockbridge Road is the smallest and one of the oldest parish churches in Winchester, whilst the Victorian Daughter Church of St Paul is one of the largest. The church community has recently raised and spent large sums on insulating and retiling the roof of St Paul's and on general repairs and redecoration at St Matthew's. Work is now in progress on the roof of St Paul's Church Hall. This building is heavily used for children's activities, ballet and tap dancing classes, and a preschool, whilst there is potential for increased use of the church itself. Much work needs first to be done towards improved toilets, with disabled access and a proper kitchen. There is no other building of similar size within the parish for concerts and community events. The Friends of St Matthew with St Paul has recently been launched to encourage support for improvements to both historic buildings, to expand their current use, and to safeguard their future. An open meeting is to be held in St Paul's Church, St Paul's Hill, on Monday, September the 3rd, to introduce the functioning of the Friends, with a proposed programme of social and fundraising events for 2013. All interested in the future of these buildings will be very welcome.
That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors, Jean Carswell, Ken Clemenson and Barbara Chase, and to our various technical teams. And thanks to our readers, Lorna Chorley.
Thank you.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Harding.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too, and have a good week. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope.